Searchlights sweep a cloudy twilight sky and illuminate a towering edifice in the form of the words Fox Searchlight Pictures. Fox Searchlight Pictures, a News Corporation company. A piston engine plane takes off in the night, lights cutting through the darkness and soaring past a white logo like a sharp cloudy peak. Avalon Pictures. Fox Searchlight Pictures and Avalon Pictures present a film by Mira Nair. A title reads, Miami, Florida, June the 1st, 1937. A shiny twin-engined plane sits on the tarmac at an airport in front of an excited, hat-waving crowd.
She will fly the world's full circumference, 24,902 miles to travel across the South Atlantic, crossing Africa, India.
After this round-the-world flight, Miss Earhart, are you going to give up long-distance flying?
Not while there's still life left in me. I fly for the fun of it.
A crowd of journalists photograph Amelia Earhart as she crouches on the wing of her plane, holding the hand of her grey-haired husband.
Thank you. That's enough.
Hilary Swank. Richard Gere. In Amelia, the silver plane rolls down a runway and rises into a twilight sky. The landing gear retracts into the engine nacelles as the plane settles into its element. Ewan McGregor. Christopher Eccleston. The plane cruises over fleecy clouds pierced by dark, rugged mountains. Joe Anderson, Cherry Jones, Mia Wasikowska. Casting by Avi Kaufman, CSA. The ground changes to green rolling fields. Visual effects supervisor Wojciech Zielinski. Amelia operates a small winch, sending a message to a man in the back of the plane. Music by Gabriel Yared. The message reads, 24,920 miles to go. Amelia looks over her shoulder and grins. Costume designer, Cassia Valleca Mamone. Edited by Alison C. Johnson and Lee Percy ACE. Production designer, Stephanie Carroll.
Mr. Balfour, come in, over.
Mr. Butler.
The headwinds were stronger than they knew when they took off.
I recalculated the fuel. It will cost them 9%.
Director of Photography, Stuart Dryberg, ASC. Executive Producer, Ron Bass. Executive Producer, Hilary Swank. Putnam looks grim. Co-producer, Ron Carmody. Produced by Ted Watt, Kevin Hyman and Lydia Dean Pilcher. Based on the books East to the Dawn by Susan Butler and The Sound of Wings by Mary S. Lovell. Written by Ron Bass and Anna Hamilton Phelan. Directed by Mira Nair. Amelia smiles to herself, flying over sea and white clouds. A small old monoplane with canvas-covered wings flies over lush farmland. A young girl walks through a wheat field and looks up at the small plane.
When I saw that little plane, it lifted me above the Kansas prairie.
The plane's shadow rushes over her as it flies across the face of the sun.
I had to fly.
Amelia, in a leather flying helmet, smiles as she does aerobatics in a yellow biplane with a white cross logo on the wings and tail fin.
My daddy had the wanderlust. That's why I like to keep moving. Flying lets me move in three dimensions.
She climbs to a stall, dives, and the plane starts to spin. Amelia looks worried. She corrects the spin and powers away, swooping over the sunny countryside.
Who wants a life imprisoned in safety?
She climbs into the cloud-flecked sky. New York City, April 1928.
Miss Earhart?
Mr.
Putnam will see you now.
Amelia, in a knee-length brown dress with string of pearls and hat, picks up some books and follows the assistant to the publisher's office.
Miss Earhart?
Mr. Putnam?
Please sit.
Smiling, she sits in a comfy chair in the large but cozy office.
I'm told you want to fly across the Atlantic Ocean.
I do.
Why do you want to fly?
Why?
Why do you want to fly?
Why does a man ride a horse?
Grey-haired Putnam considers her through his rimless glasses.
Because he wants to, I guess. Three women have died trying. Two others have escaped with their lives. If you do make it, you will be the first. Which is the real attraction for both of us, I expect.
Always nice to know what the real attraction is.
The plane was bought from Admiral Byrd by Amy Guest, a socialite, who's asked to find an American. Educated, well-spoken, a flyer, and preferably physically attractive.
Why would that matter?
Because she wants the world to pay attention. And pretty girls command more attention.
Was that your advice?
There'll be a contract for the girl's story with the New York Times. Also a book to be published under her name. But all the money from this will go to Mrs. Guest.
Except for the part that goes to you.
Well, this is America, and therefore I am obligated to make as much money as I can. You have a wonderful laugh, Miss Earhart.
You said she wants a flyer.
Don't get your hopes up. The celebrated Wilmer Stultz will be pilot. There will be a male co-pilot who will also serve as navigator. The woman will be purely a passenger.
Amelia frowns. Later, Putnam points to a book in a shop window.
Take Lindbergh. I published his book 3 months after his historic flight.
Must be wonderful to actually know him, to be a friend of his.
A friend? Calm down. Can't stand the man. He's a stiff-ass, sanctimonious, boring prude. Was a bestseller, though.
Why would anyone want to read a book written by a passenger?
Because the hook is that they're going to make the woman commander. The pilot will sign a contract saying he's under your direction and control. It would be your flight.
My fraud, you mean?
Very distasteful word in book publishing, Miss Earhart.
I don't know, Mr. Putnam. My dream has always been to fly across the Atlantic, but the way you want me to do it is far from the way I've envisioned it.
Let me be frank. At your level of flight experience, I wouldn't place you anywhere near the group that would normally be considered for this. If a woman were to do any flying at all. Miss Earhart, let me be painfully clear. I give the orders and you take them. And if you do as you're told, you'll be a star. And I will be nearby, a small particle of dust in your constellation.
Spoken like a gentleman.
Miss Earhart.
Mr. Putnam. Of course, a gentleman would have paid for my ticket.
They shake hands formally, and Amelia walks away down a staircase at Grand Central Station. Short-haired and tanned with freckles, Amelia grins as she flies. The title in handwritten script reads, Crossing the Gambia, 20,719 miles to go. The terrain is scrubland dotted with trees. She beckons her navigator to the cockpit. She points down to herds of animals who scatter as the aircraft approaches.
What the hell are they?
Oryx!
He nods, looking none the wiser.
Look how free they are! No constraints, no schedules to keep.
For a gal who don't like schedules, you sure got yourself hooked up with the wrong fella, Mr. Putnam.
She grins and looks back at the oryx and giraffes. She and Putnam enter a hangar in Boston, Massachusetts, 1928.
Boys, I'd like to introduce your commander, Miss Amelia Earhart. Say hello to Slim Gordon, your navigator.
How do you do?
And Bill Stultz.
Hello, Bill.
Best pilot working today.
How much fuel do you lose because of these?
Costs us at least 400 gallons.
Well, why have them?
The owner wants to protect her plane in case you have to ditch it at sea.
But those are decisions I have to make, not somebody else. They're not making this trip. We are.
But she owns the plane, and this is still America, Miss Earhart. Ownership is the trump card.
Sad to say, but dollars put planes in the air.
I wonder if it can keep us up there. Not that I've ever had enough to try. Our job was to figure out how to fly this beauty without gasoline.
Include the whole engine up here. The name is Amelia Earhart.
Amelia runs her hand along the fuselage of the Fokker float plane. On another day, Bill walks along the high wing as Slim polishes the windscreen. Some crates arrive on a trolley, and Bill thoughtfully sips from a mug.
They're leaving for Newfoundland. Yes, they'll be taking off for there tomorrow, weather permitting. Make sure the reporters are there. Goodbye.
Putnam puffs out his cheeks as he hangs up the phone. Amelia hands him some envelopes.
Popping off letters. From my dad, my mom, my sis. You know, in case.
I'm honored that you'd leave these with me.
Who else? If I do pop off, it's your fault. Pray I make it.
Not much of a prayer, ma'am.
Then at least tip your hat and cross your fingers.
He mimes hat-tipping with an envelope and crosses his fingers with a wry smile. They both grin.
Well, see ya.
See ya.
His smile fades to a worried frown as she leaves, but gives Amelia a cheery wave with the envelopes as she jogs towards the plane moored on a lake on its large floats.
It's a short hop from Boston to Newfoundland for Amelia Earhart and crew, then on to Ireland and possibly the record books. Earhart and top-notch ace Bill Stokes have to get airborne. Quite a feat once their plane is fully loaded for the Atlantic crossing.
The plane skims across the calm lake, the word friendship emblazoned on the fuselage. Bill and Slim exchange a worried glance as the heavy aircraft refuses to get airborne. It rises a few inches, then drops back down to the water. Amelia hangs on tightly in the back and watches tight-lipped as Bill, with a grimace, cuts power to the engines.
Seems like we've got a situation here. A real problem. When you figure it out, Commander, let us know.
Amelia stares at the water. A house on a hill is shrouded in mist. Amelia testily draws some net curtains, stomps pensively across the room, then slumps face down onto the bed. Men are drinking and laughing in a room next door. Amelia eyes them grumpily, then sits on the bed studying a map. Mist drifts across a lake with a wooded, rocky shoreline. Amelia walks onto a rock beside a narrow inlet.
What time is it?
It's time to fly. Get up, get dressed. We're going now.
Where's the weather report? It's not good enough.
Great. Either we fly to Ireland or you're going home today.
Well, it's not good enough.
It's fine. There's a tailwind all the way. We'll offload to 700 gallons, which gets us off the water, and the wind will get us to Ireland.
You're dumping fuel? You're serious?
Just as serious as you're hungover. Slim, you go now. Get the late weather. We'll meet you at the plane. Slim, go. I've got this.
Her eyes bore sternly into the hungover navigator as he gathers up his stuff. Bill looks unhappy, then Amelia turns her attention to him.
I've loved one person unconditionally, Bill. He's the most caring and generous and charming and flat-out funny guy I'll ever know. He's my father. He's a drunk. And he's let me down all my life. Now you get out of that goddamn bed and you fly that plane to Ireland, or I swear to you, I will.
Newfoundland, June 17, 1928.
Good. Slim, start the engines. This report indicates some degree of risk. It's a risk I'm taking.
Bill casts a skeptical eye over the paper.
Have a nice flight.
Read tomorrow's papers, Bill. We'll both be in them.
Bill squirms as Amelia slings in her bags and climbs aboard the Friendship. Bill stands forlornly by the jetty as pressmen arrive.
So, to take off, you pull back on the thing, right?
Bill can't help but smile as Amelia grins at him from the cockpit. He shakes his head, runs towards the plane, and climbs aboard. The tri-moted Friendship eases away from the wooden jetty as the morning sun begins to burn through the mist. Bill grins as he sits at the controls and turns back to Amelia in the fuselage.
Start the clock!
Amelia clicks on a stopwatch as Bill eases the throttles forward and the plane gathers speed on the glassy, smooth water. Again, Friendship bounces, skimming the surface of the lake. Slim grimaces in frustration.
Let's hope this works!
Amelia looks at the stopwatch and the plane rises, then drops again. There are rocks right ahead.
We're up! Good work!
Well done, Commander!
Bill grins broadly and gives her a thumbs up. The plane climbs slowly over the calm waters dotted with small islands.
The fog comes on little cat feet. It sits looking over harbor and city on silent haunches and then moves on. Listen. The motors are humming sweetly and I feel at home.
Join the party.
Putnam is sitting in his office, waiting alone in the dark.
Mr. Putnam, there's a call coming in.
Putnam.
I'm afraid we've lost contact with Miss Earhart's plane, sir.
Keep me informed. Thank you.
His secretary slips out of the office. Friendship flies on through the night over the ocean, then towards a rising sun.
We've been flying for 19 hours plus.
How far to land?
Radio's still out. There's no way to compute wind speed and drift in the clouds, so God only knows where island is.
We got maybe an hour of gasoline left. Probably less.
If we land on the water now, we might have a rescue.
And a failure!
Amelia glares at Bill.
That's out!
Slim glances anxiously at his crewmates. Then the plane is rocked by turbulence and drops suddenly.
Slim, go help her.
Hang on. Okay, I'm coming. Hold on. Got it. Take my hand.
Slim's thrown against the door, which bursts open.
Hang on, Slim!
Boys all right?
Amelia hauls Slim back into the cabin, goes to close the door, and is thrown out herself. Slim wrestles her back inside, then closes and secures the door. Bill looks anxiously back into the cabin. Amelia sits numbly, her face blank with shock. The fuel gauge registers empty as Friendship flies on above the clouds towards the sun. Slim munches a sandwich as he stares out through the windscreen. He nudges the pilot, who's fiddling with a fuel tap.
We got land!
Woo! We did it! Nice work!
Slim grins with his mouth full. Amelia beams toothily, and Bill smiles with relief. spaceship slides in for a perfect landing on flat, calm water. Amelia smiles broadly. A small crowd is gathered on the rocky shore. Two of the local men rowed the transatlantic trio ashore. Slim, in a smart jacket, nonchalantly adjusts his tie as the crowd point excitedly. They smile happily at one another as the reception committee on the shore swells to hundreds. Bill leads the way, clambering out of the small rowing boat and helping Amelia ashore. Then flashbulbs start to pop. As they're patted on the back by anyone who could reach, policemen approach through the crowd.
That's it all, welcome.
Is it Irish tradition to greet newcomers with song?
I couldn't say. This is Wales.
A headline reads, Amelia Earhart crosses Atlantic, tells thrills of flight. Ticker tapes rain down. Sitting in an open-top car, clutching a huge bunch of roses, Amelia points up at the clouds of falling tape and streamers. Putnam waves from the front seat, and kids play with armfuls of fallen paper. Bill holds the car door open for Amelia.
Are you going to be the next girls to become pilots?
Amelia notices Putnam grinning at her.
What?
It feels strange. We haven't had a moment alone. Just the two of us.
With a cheery wave to Putnam, Amelia gets into the sidecar of a police motorcycle.
Amelia! Not in the rain!
I flew across the Atlantic!
Hold it, right there.
You have dirt on your face?
I believe you're referring to my freckles. They come with the skin.
Well, I don't like them.
At a photo shoot, Putnam adjusts Amelia's flying jacket.
Very heroic.
Think Lindbergh. Lady Lindy, that's what they'll call you.
As I look back on the flight, I think of two questions that have been asked me most frequently. Where are you going next? And what did you wear?
She sits writing at a table in a garden. Later, she takes a train to Putnam.
Lucky strike endorsement. I wrote the copy myself.
What does it say? I don't smoke, but you should?
No, it says that Lucky Strikes were the only cigarettes aboard the Friendship. Which is true. I hid them under the seat.
True. Maybe, but misleading. Why would I sign that?
So that Bill and Slim get paid.
He grins smugly and holds out a pen. She signs reluctantly on the dotted line.
Amelia Earhart, the only woman to fly across the Atlantic, just can't keep her feet on the ground. The publisher, George Putnam, has commissioned her to write a book on her flying adventures.
Headline reads, Amelia Earhart makes autogyro altitude record, takes flying windmill up 19,000 feet. She pushes a biplane back into a hangar.
Thanks, fellas.
Putnam gets out of his open-topped car and saunters into the hangar.
You didn't have to come get me.
You do have a dress to change into, I hope.
Well, it's just a college class, George.
No. You have to take every appearance seriously. You never know what it might lead to.
Spoken by a man who should know.
In the car, Putnam leans across and kisses her.
What was that for?
Good luck.
What happened to tipping your hat and crossing your fingers?
Oh, I'm afraid I'm way beyond that now.
Like it or not?
I think I like it.
Grinning, she pulls him towards her and kisses him on the cheek. Later, Amelia's addressing a group of students in a theater.
Wait.
What did your mother say when she knew you flew across the Atlantic?
Well, she sent a telegram congratulating me, and then she said the next time she wants to sit beside me in the cockpit.
How did it feel to fly over the ocean? Were you scared?
When I looked down at the sea, it seemed much like the sky to me, as if the sky and the sea were the same. I felt much as I do when I'm flying upward toward the sun, transported somehow to a simple, safe, beautiful place where everything is comprehensible.
Whales spout in a calm, glistening sea.
Good night, Amelia.
Good night.
A bellhop helps Amelia with her bags. In her hotel room, she sits wrapped in a red towel, smiling to herself in the steam from the bathroom. She examines her reflection in a face mirror, then considers her body thoughtfully in a full-length one. Amelia walks through the luxurious hotel in a fur-collared coat. Putnam's in a drawing room reading a paper in an easy chair by the fire. He gets up to answer Amelia's knock.
Dance with me, George.
Hugging the coat to her, she's wreathed in smiles as she switches on a radio. George crosses the room to Amelia and gently takes her hand as they look deeply into each other's eyes. They dance, cheek to cheek, swaying to the music.
Seem to come from everywhere.
Amelia shrugs off her coat. She's wearing silk pajamas.
Way up in the blue. I'll always.
Still swaying, they linger face to face before their lips meet. They hold each other tightly as they kiss. A young, dark-haired woman in a red hat and long coat walks down a corridor. George opens the door.
Hello, Eleanor.
Mr. Putnam?
Yes, please come in. Amelia.
Amelia comes out of the bedroom.
Miss Smith, I've been following your career with a great deal of admiration.
Oh, Miss Earhart. You are such an inspiration. I never get tired of reading about you.
They're saying you get 500 a week on the lecture circuit.
On a good week.
On a bad week.
Depends on whether you want the real or the self.
Oh, I don't underestimate the value of selling.
A 16-year-old girl makes headlines illegally flying under the four bridges of the East River. You don't seem to need much help selling yourself.
Actually, Mr. Putnam, I was hoping you could do to me what you've done to her.
What's your primary ambition?
To take Amelia's place as the number one female pilot.
You want a tip?
I do.
If I listened to everyone who said it was impossible, I'd never be flying. Don't let anyone turn you around.
Amelia smiles encouragingly. George grins.
Thank you.
So lovely to see you.
Amelia's in a smart frock at a party.
Good evening,
Miss Earhart. Oh, Amelia. This is Jean Vidal. Amelia Earhart, the aviatrix. She's a friend of George's.
How do you do, Miss Earhart?
Quite well, Mr. Vidal, thank you.
I understand you're writing a book about your transatlantic journey under the tutelage of the master.
Yes.
You enjoying your stay here in Rye?
I must say I'm a bit out of my element. The distance between this world and where I come from is as great as the distance between the sun and the moon.
Then you believe the whole opposites attract theory is...
You're hooey.
Where are you from?
Kansas.
Hooey is a Kansas word?
Yes, I suppose it is.
Public relations. It's a new field, quite entirely new. It's not publicity, not promotion.
Miss Earhart, may I call you Amelia? We may be from different worlds, but we have more in common than you might imagine.
Is that so?
Yes. I'm a teacher. At West Point, true, but still a teacher.
What do you teach?
Flying.
George is sitting glumly at a dining table with a whiskey. Amelia enters and studies him with a worried frown before joining him at the table.
Listen, Amelia.
He pours himself another glass of Dutch courage.
This is the first time I've ever seen you stumped for a word. What is it?
Marry me.
What?
I want you to marry me.
I don't want to get married, George. I'm not the marrying kind.
You see, you and I embarking on a new life.
Dear George, only I can make a fulfilling life for myself.
I don't believe that one can have a fulfilled life alone. Only when it's shared. Let me share your life with you. Let me try to give you whatever you want.
Amelia withdraws her hand from his as George stares at her with intense sincerity.
When I was a little girl, for my 7th birthday, my father gave me a globe, and I'd spend hours just spinning it slowly, reading the names of all those strange, faraway places. Morocco, Spain, Ethiopia. Dreaming that someday I would go to those places. Like a wayfarer. A traveler. A vagabond. I want to be free, George. To be a vagabond of the air.
I'll help you get there.
She smiles, moved, but unsure. Amelia's twin-engined Lockheed Electra flies over a deep, rugged canyon. She smiles as they pass over another herd of animals on the scrubland. Children run beside the dirt runway as the plane comes into land at Gao, Mali, 18,498 miles to go. The aviators wave from the cockpit window. Co-pilot Noonan helps Amelia down from the plane's wing. Grinning, Amelia uses a small cine camera to film the happy crowds greeting them, then hands the camera to her navigator. Sunlight filters through a ceiling of rushes, dappling Amelia with shadows as she runs her hand along the hard, baked mud wall of a building.
I am on my shining adventure, flying the world. No borders, just horizons. Only freedom.
The plane is airborne once again, flying over rocky, semi-arid grasslands. Amelia smiles as she pulls a silk scarf from her shoulders and opens the cockpit window. She drops the scarf out of the window, and it flutters away across the bright blue sky. As the scarf ripples in the wind, a curtain billows in a breeze in Rye, New York, 1931. Amelia's at a desk, writing.
Dear GP, you must know again my reluctance to marry. My feeling that I shatter thereby my life in flying, which means so much to me. In this connection, I may have to keep some place where I can go to be myself now and then. For I cannot guarantee to endure at all the confinements of even an attractive cage.
Thoughtfully, she picks up the letter and goes to sit on the bed where George is still dozing. She studies him for a moment with a tight, troubled smile.
in our life together. I shall not hold you to any medieval code of faithfulness to me, nor shall I consider myself bound to you similarly. I must exact a cruel promise, and that is you will let me go in a year if we find no happiness together.
Only you, my dear Amelia, can say those brutal words to me. Still have me wanting to be with you. Forever.
He sits up, smiling affectionately, and they kiss.
Amelia, do you promise to love, honor, and obey this man?
Excuse me, sir. May we take that back a bit, please? Love, yes, if it's warranted. Honor, same thing. Obey, I can't promise that under any circumstances, but the groom understands that.
Please remove obey from the prayer so we can wrap this up
before the bride runs off.
I now pronounce you man and wife.
They turn towards each other as the small gathering throw rice in the green sunny garden. Later, Amelia fastens George's cufflinks. He caresses her cheek and runs his hand up her stockinged leg and leans forward to kiss her. A biplane flies through a misty sky and swoops low over crowds, planes and balloons at an air show.
Announcing the first women's air derby, racing from Santa Monica to Cleveland.
Amelia's with Eleanor.
Now let's fire.
What's this we're feeling?
Advance press release. The gentlemen who are running the derby are about to announce the race has to end west of the Rockies.
What? Mm-hmm. That's absurd. They're cutting out half the route. What are they thinking?
They're thinking that it would be bad press when you girls start smashing into the Rocky Mountains.
How dare they? I'm going to have a word with these gentlemen.
Wait. Come here and walk with me. I think it would benefit women flyers everywhere if Amelia won the derby. You know, the publicity would put the race and all of you up there with the boys.
Eleanor looks unconvinced.
Maybe I'll win the race myself.
Well, you can't win if your plane doesn't pass the final inspection. And let me predict that it won't.
Well, that's a threat.
No, a prediction.
Amelia's the one who said I shouldn't let anybody turn me around.
Yeah, she probably meant me.
Well, obviously she doesn't see me as a threat.
Oh, sure she does. She just doesn't care.
Hey, Gladys! I let the boys in charge know, and know in certain terms we're not changing our route. We'll sail over those mountains like we're eagles.
I'm an intensely loyal person, Eleanor. This is what my loyalty requires.
Lady Lindy herself, Amelia Earhart!
Eleanor scowls at George as Amelia starts her plane.
Amelia Earhart organizes a competition for women pilots. 9 cities in 9 days. Tragedy strikes, and there are crashes along the way.
On a newsreel, a flyer's helped from her wrecked plane.
The race continues. Thousands plan to be on hand to witness those who make it as they approach the finish line. Here they come, folks. In first place, Louise Dayton from Bentonville, Arkansas.
George waits anxiously in his car as more planes approach.
I'd like to add my congratulations to Louise Dayton and announce that we have formed an organization to promote women in aviation. 99 women pilots have applied, so we're calling it the 99s. And we're going to fly forever.
At home, Amelia and George are having breakfast.
George?
Mm-hmm.
I've been thinking.
Yes?
I want to fly the Atlantic.
You already have.
As a passenger, it doesn't count. I want to fly it solo.
He looks up from his paper and stares at her.
It's been 5 years since Lindbergh. No one has made it solo. 14 have died trying.
I'll make it. I know I will.
And if you don't?
I'd rather face a watery grave than go on living as a fraud.
What's wrong with that? I've been very successful at it.
Amelia Earhart demonstrates her flying prowess and adventurous spirit. And now, she is set to climb to new heights on her second attempt to cross the Atlantic. No more a passenger. This time, Miss Earhart will do it alone.
In a hangar at Teterboro, New Jersey, May 20th, 1932, Amelia checks the metal propeller of her gleaming red plane. George looks on anxiously, but manages a smile as she approaches.
Still sleepy?
Well, I'll nap on the way. Good news about flying solo. No one making noise.
You have money?
No.
He reaches for his wallet.
A whole 20?
Oh, I spent all money on ocean liner passage. Go and bring you back. It's non-refundable. Please do your part.
I will.
She looks at him steadily, then with a smile, heads for the aircraft.
Well, see ya.
George heaves a sigh, and Amelia throws him a jaunty salute as she climbs into the cockpit.
See you.
George's face is taut with worry. Amelia flies through the night.
Presently all clear over the Atlantic, keeping an eye on a storm system south of the route.
It was a night of stars, of tropic loveliness. Stars hung outside my cockpit window, near enough to touch.
Alone in the cockpit, Amelia smiles to herself and checks a small map showing Newfoundland. Lightning flashes ahead of her and she frowns as the plane forges on through thickening cloud. Lightning flashes around the plane, which is buffeted by wind and rain. Fear registers on Amelia's face as she remembers riding a horse in a thunderstorm as a child and galloping beside a plane.
If Lindbergh did it, you can do it.
She puts the plane into a climb, soaring out of the fearsome clouds to look back down on the storm below.
Putnam, sir. If she's on course, the moon should be with her the rest of the way. Weather updates are coming in every quarter hour from Kimball.
Worry furrows Amelia's brow as ice begins to form on the windscreen. It thickens, covering the plane. The alternator spins as, weighed down by ice, the plane loses height, tumbling through the clouds. Chunks of ice break off as the plane falls, stabilizing just above the dark waves of the ocean. Amelia watches intently as the alternator shows that she's slowly climbing again. She gasps with renewed fear at a flame flickering from an exhaust pipe.
Bourget Airport, France. A galaxy of press, well-wishers and ambassadors alike has gathered here in Paris in anticipation of the historic moment when Amelia Earhart will touch down where Lindbergh did years ago. The world waits with bated breath as Amelia flies solo across the Atlantic Ocean.
Newsreel announces Amelia's 16th-hour solo flight across the Atlantic. In the cockpit, Amelia's eyes close and she's overcome with fatigue.
Oh.
wraps herself awake with smelling salts, and the plane is again buffeted by turbulence. The sun comes up and the air becomes still. Amelia shades her eyes from the sun's rays, then smiles through her discomfort. There's land ahead, lush, green, rolling fields. As Amelia smiles happily, shepherds tending their flocks point up at the red aircraft coming into land in their field. A bemused shepherd ambles towards the plane as Amelia stops the engine and flings open the cockpit hatch.
Excuse me, sir. Where am I?
In Gallagher's pasture. Where are you supposed to be?
When I left, I was aiming for Paris.
Oh, you missed, you know. It's over there.
Well, hello, sheep.
Yes.
Miss Earhart has arrived safely, sir. She's landed in Ireland.
Wonderful, wonderful news!
Journey's end. Here she is, safe and sound on a farm in Ireland, having just completed the first flight by a woman across the Atlantic. And there's the little plane in which she's broken all records.
The headline proclaims Earhart makes it, and she shakes the farmer's hand. She wears a red dress to greet George.
Well done. Well done.
Newsreel announces Amelia in England, London. First pictures of Amelia Earhart, Putnam abroad. Crowds brave rain to see first woman transatlantic flyer. Paramount News. Miss Earhart lays a wreath on the tomb of France's unknown soldier. Meet Mrs. Putnam, who flew alone across the Atlantic. Movietone films America's air heroine on landing in Ireland and in London.
Action!
You're on vacation with Amelia Earhart luggage. Travel the Nile. Moonlight. I'm sorry, I can't say this.
She's surrounded by dancing girls on the set of an advert.
I try to put the freedom that is flying into my clothes.
Her signature endorses Amelia Earhart Fashions.
Eastman Kodak cameras. Travel the world, save your memories.
She wears a hat like a globe with a model plane on it and holds up a waffle maker. She films with a cine camera.
The second person to fly the Atlantic solo, and the first one to fly
it once. Standing room only. Good.
14 hours and 54 minutes.
Are you staying for this?
Oh, no, I can't. I've got to meet the features editor at the Post and then organize that photo shoot for the new luggage line. What's wrong with you today?
Here I am jumping through hoops like a white horse in a circus. That's what's wrong.
The only way we can finance your flying is to make enough money to finance your flying.
Amelia Earhart.
Poor nothing.
She manufactures a radiant smile as she steps forward to a standing ovation from the crowds at a theater.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
From the wings, George gives a satisfied nod, then leaves carrying his briefcase. Adoring fans all want her signature.
Miss Earhart?
What's your name?
Gore.
That's an unusual name.
I know. I don't much like it.
We blame his mother. She was a Gore, roots going back to colonial times.
Hello. God, you have to wait for that.
You have two Vidal men to protect you. You'll be fine.
You are so much prettier than your pictures. Well, thank you, but
have you heard from Lindbergh? What did he say?
Well done.
Are you going to write another book?
Yes, if my husband has anything to say about it.
Take my hand. Come on, boy. Let's you and I lead Miss Earhart to safety.
Vidal escorts Amelia through the crowds. Young Gore is asleep in the back as Vidal drives Amelia in his car.
You know, that woman was right.
Excuse me?
I felt the same way when I first met you. You are much prettier than your pictures.
It all seems rather silly considering what's happening out there. Those men, all those families. Why have I been given so much?
Men line up at a soup kitchen.
You've earned the spotlight. Enjoy it. You'll be fine. Just hold on to yourself.
I'm not sure who that is anymore.
She's that girl from Kansas who says hooey.
She smiles as Vidal grins suavely. Pathé News announces New Deal dominates America. Earhart, a beacon of hope to a nation in depression. Amelia Earhart conquers Pacific. Thousands hail flyer after first solo hop ever made from Hawaii to California. Headlines praise Amelia for lending her voice to causes. She's praised in Britain, heard by the Wednesday Morning Club. And take to air, woman flyer urges her sex.
Distinguished dignitaries from every corner of the world, please rise and welcome Miss Amelia Earhart, honored guest of President Roosevelt and the League of American Pilots.
I'd like to toast a world-class pilot who, at age 15, became the youngest woman in the world to fly solo. This year, she's recognized as Woman Pilot of the Year. Here's to Eleanor Smith, an inspiration to us all.
Your husband encourages you to fly across the Atlantic. My husband wouldn't want me to fly to M Street.
So he hasn't actually forbidden you?
Franklin doesn't forbid. He just feels it's a waste of my valuable time to learn since I can't afford to buy a plane.
The wrong Roosevelt got elected.
I did ask about aviation, but he hasn't decided on the structure yet. It might be under the Bureau of Commerce.
I think the structure may be less important than the man chosen to run it.
I'm sorry, my hearing's failing. I missed the words, or woman?
This may be one of those rare instances when the most accomplished candidate turns out to be male.
Is it a name I know?
Jean Vidal.
I love finding the exception that proves the rule.
How do you feel about flying at night?
Mrs. Roosevelt stares at Amelia wide-eyed. They fly over city lights, twinkling in the darkness.
Whoa! There we are, ladies and gentlemen. Champagne. Champagne to toast the First Lady.
The First Lady smiles happily, sitting up front next to Amelia.
Put your hands on the wheel! It's dual controls. No one will ever know.
Tentatively, Mrs. Roosevelt takes hold of the joystick with immaculately white-gloved hands. Amelia takes her hands off the controls.
Oh, dear God!
They swoop over the city and later bid their farewells.
This night.
She seems quite taken with you.
And vice versa.
Then again, lots of people are quite taken with you.
If you're referring to Jean, as I know you are, I was able to get a word in for him to head the aeronautics branch.
How did it go?
It's her husband's decision, but I'm hopeful.
Jean is so fortunate to have you in his corner, Amelia.
He'll help me, and I'm helping him.
They climb into the back of a waiting car and sit in unsmiling silence.
Thank you.
club, the smiling, bare-shouldered singer wears a satin orange dress. Couples turn elegantly on the dance floor.
Transcontinental was too ambitious. Too many hops, too tough on the ladies. But the shuttle, Washington, New York, Boston, we think it's the future. Will you go there with us?
What on earth would you need me for?
You're the most famous woman in America, that's what for. You know, I can see it now. You on the poster with Gene, a legendary athlete at West Point, two events at the Olympics, a top pilot who's going to be running the skies for Roosevelt.
Thanks,
when he
Paul,
wins.
I think you've even talked me out of it.
Amelia averts her gaze demurely as she and Gene smile at one another. That you do so well. Amelia studies Gene as he taps a cigarette on a metal case before lighting it. They're sitting at a bar, she with a coffee, he with a brandy as well. Gene thinks as he draws on his cigarette.
May I ask you a question?
That woman over there. Beautiful.
You're the only woman I know who points out other beautiful women.
Lovely legs. Unlike mine.
No, I'm sure that's not true. That's why you wear trousers? No. And all this while, I thought you just wanted to be one of the boys.
I may have at one time, but not anymore.
They look deeply into one another's eyes. Later, they're waiting for a lift. A glamorous couple exit the lift and stare at Amelia.
Was that Amelia? Sixth floor, please.
Amelia and Jean stand next to each other in the lift, but slowly draw closer and kiss passionately. Jean runs his hands across her bare back, exposed by the deep cut of her dress. The lift stops, the doors open, and they step out together. Newsreel proclaims, Amelia says it's faster to fly. A tri-motor plane takes to the air from a snowy runway. Miss Earhart rates planes safe as autos. A plane flies past a city skyscraper. The dream of aviation is a reality for all. A plane keeps up with a train on the ground. Amelia Earhart, Jean Bedal launch the shuttle. The three-engine shuttle plane flies over a city and the door is open to let the passengers out. A taxi arrives at Amelia's. From a window, George watches stone-faced as Amelia greets the Vidals.
Couldn't wait for your visit this weekend.
Lewis.
Tiger! Tiger!
The wallpaper.
Coming, Gore.
Upstairs, the lad's sitting up in bed. She goes to give him a hug.
It's okay. Do you know why I papered this room like this?
No, but I wish you hadn't.
It's because I'm very, very afraid of jungles. So, when I find myself worrying about it, I test my courage. This room and pretending I'm in the deepest, darkest part of Africa. In a jungle so thick I can't even see the sky above. And I start to feel better right away. Because I looked my fear right in the face.
She smiles gently and Gore settles back down on his pillow.
Miss Earhart?
Yes.
Could you please marry my father? Then I'll never be afraid of anything, ever again.
Oh, I'm already married to Mr. Putnam.
Why can't you be married to Mr. Putnam and my father?
She smiles indulgently and closes the door.
I put together 1 month in Europe. It'll close some foreign licensing deals, open new markets.
When are you leaving?
Well, the thing is, I'd like you to come.
I don't see how I could.
Well, I've already spoken to the promoters. They're willing to switch some of the lecture dates just for us.
Well, it's not just that. There's my work on the shuttle. I've just started as Jean's consultant at the aeronautics branch.
Normally, I'd be worried about leaving you here alone, but I suppose that won't be a problem, will it?
What are you trying to say?
Jean here in our house, when I am here, is one thing. When I am not here, I can't have it.
I understand.
I can't have it.
George stabs his trowel into the earth of the flowerbed they're weeding, gets up, and walks back to the house. Their dog trots over to Amelia, who continues to kneel pensively by the flowerbed. Clouds billow as Amelia sits deep in thought at the controls of her round-the-world plane. Her eyes fill with tears. A title shows Karachi, Pakistan, 13,888 miles to go. The terrain is blank, featureless desert. Wind whips at the sand dunes and a camel train moves along slowly at night. Campfires glow in the darkness. Amelia stands wrapped in a blanket, looking up at the moon. A sliver of cloud drifts darkly across the silver face of the moon, and clouds billow.
Hello?
I found something you'd written. Quite beautiful. To touch your hand and see your face today is joy.
Los Angeles, 1934.
Casual presence in a room recalls the stars that watched
us as we lay.
I mark you in the moving crowd and see again those stars.
A warm night lent us long ago. We loved so then, we love so now. Thank you so much for writing that. Even though I'd never seen it.
At the time, I... George.
He puts down the phone. Amelia tearfully eyes the receiver in her hand.
George.
She cries into her hand, which she then places against her heart. In shirt and trousers, she walks down a corridor at a smart club on her way to meet Jean. She nods to a doorman.
Right inside. Thank you.
How are you?
Jean kisses her on the cheek and they sit.
I wondered if you were avoiding me a little or...
Just very, very busy. I'm leaving for Indiana. Edward Elliott of Purdue wants me to build a women's careers department there.
That's a wonderful idea, especially now.
What's special about now?
You don't read the papers?
Not unless someone makes me.
Well, someone should. They're all saying you took recklessly dangerous solo flights for no earthly purpose other than publicity, meaning money. They also harp on a growing list of products you commercially endorse.
How thoughtless of me to be doing all this in a society where no one else is interested in making money, present company included.
People viewing you as Lady Lindy, America's sweetheart of the skies, the wife, mother, daughter they all wished they'd had, would be helpful.
Thanks for the tip.
Thanks for not being defensive.
Amelia looks around, shifting awkwardly.
I've decided I'm resigning as your consultant at the aeronautics branch. The public linking of our names does more harm to that image of mine than everything else put together. And you... of all people should know that whatever I do so that I can fly. And I want to fly that beautiful bird as far as it will take me. I'm going to fly around the world, Jean.
It can't be done.
Well, I'm going to try. And I'm going home to George.
Jean stands with a pleading look.
You can't mean that.
Tearfully, but her mind made up, Amelia leaves. Jean remains standing helplessly. Amelia's at the wheel of an open-topped car, a silk headscarf billowing in the wind. Driving through woods, George is in his car wearing sunglasses with round lenses. Waves roll up onto a rocky shoreline. George and Amelia paddle in the surf and hold hands. They look deep into each other's eyes. George gives a tight smile, and Amelia puts her arms around his neck. They walk on, arm in arm.
Race it to New York City.
They play chase. A Christmas tree is colourfully lit on an evening in New York City, 1935.
Well, are you going to tell me you're surprised, or do I need to be physical?
Boy, that's exactly what I want.
George kisses her.
Come on, GP, tell me.
If you're serious about this flying around the world nonsense, it might be handy to have a plane to fly in.
Except it would have to be an Electra, and they cost...
$36,000, after a generous discount from Lockheed.
It may as well be a billion.
Not to mention at least another 36 to have it modified and ready.
And your surprise is you robbed a bank?
Oh, actually, university. I persuaded Ed Elliott to create an Amelia Earhart Fund for aeronautical research at Purdue.
I suggested a budget amount of $80,000 for a suitable flying laboratory.
The Electra?
Completely stunned, Amelia stares at her husband.
Your Electra, Amelia.
George!
Well, there is one thing. It's the trustees and donors. They have to be on board also.
Well, that's my job. I'll do a series of lectures on...
No, there will be no more horses. No more hoops for my Amelia.
Thank you, George.
She clasps his cheek and kisses him.
Even if you don't care if she lives or dies, you know her death will not be a plus for aviation women or your next campaign.
What if she doesn't die? What if she just circumnavigates the globe, but it's a plus for everyone?
The closest land west of Hawaii is beyond the range of the Electra.
She'll refuel in the air.
She doesn't have the flying skills.
She's taking bigger risks.
Yes, I'm aware of that. Don't be so proud of it.
I understand the danger, fellas. I've studied the route. What have you come up with?
Jean unfolds a map on the table in the hangar where the silver Electra is being readied.
This is Howland Island. It's halfway between Honolulu and New Guinea. There's no elevation, no trees. Hardly anyone knows or cares that it exists.
It would be almost impossible to spot from the air.
It's really tiny, like a grain of sand in 1,000 miles of nowhere. If you miss this island, you're out of fuel with 2,000 miles to go.
But I'll have Fred Noonan, the best celestial navigator around.
In fact, she's taking Fred along for the whole trip.
Giving up my little arrogance about solo. Safety first, yes?
You've always had Amelia's best interest at heart.
And for that, we're both grateful.
Stay for supper?
I'd like to, but I better be getting back.
Please tell Gore hello for me. Give him this. He can track the time zones.
He misses you.
Jean takes Amelia's gift of a watch and leaves. With a rueful frown, she watches him go. George studies his wife in her white flyer's boiler suit with the letters AE on the back.
He doesn't understand, really.
Amelia grins at her husband and they nuzzle up to one another before she goes back to work on the plane. She pats an engine, cowling affectionately as she climbs a ladder. Amelia's looking at the sea, waiting for Fred Noonan, her navigator.
Hello, Fred.
Ma'am.
Good to see you.
And you.
Thank you.
He's brought out a flask of coffee. He gives her a friendly smile.
Are we sizing me up?
She grins.
I'm told mid-air refueling would be beyond my abilities.
You have to put in time, learn the technique. Even so, 20% it works, 20% you crash, 60% you don't get the fuel, so you're cooked anyway.
Better odds of hitting that island?
How do you feel about 100%?
Even with cloud cover?
Pan Am told you I'm the best celestial navigator they've ever seen.
They did.
Someone else told you I got a drinking problem, which is a big part of why we're here, right? Everyone I ever worked for will tell you nothing's interfered with my performance, not once.
We'd be looking for an island less than 2 miles long with nothing higher on it than 18 feet.
That's what you'd be looking for. I'd be looking for coordinates on a map.
How can I lose?
They raise their mugs in a toast.
Amelia Earhart leaves Oakland for Honolulu, setting out on the most dangerous aeronautic feat ever attempted, to traverse the waistline of the world.
Honolulu, Hawaii, March 20th, 1937.
For the people back in the States, Miss Earhart. This way.
Journalists follow Amelia and Noonan as they have garlands of flowers draped around their necks.
Thank you.
They pose beside their shiny, metal-skinned aircraft.
We've got so much fuel we can't possibly get off the ground. Much safer than flying.
Well, we'll need enough for a third pass at Howland after you miss it the first couple times around.
Good thinking.
Amelia stands by the cockpit and waves as Fred gets into the cabin to his position behind the huge fuel tanks.
Clear!
Amelia waves again to the journalists and dancers in grass skirts gathered on the tarmac. She puts on her headphones and eases the throttle forwards. The plane starts to roll. Fred watches from a side window as the Electra taxis to the runway past a fire truck and more journalists. Amelia starts her takeoff run. Onlookers cluster at the edge of the runway, and Amelia eases up to full throttle. The heavily laden plane lurches as the tail lifts. Fred's thrown around, and Amelia grimaces in fear as the plane swerves across the runway. The left-hand landing gear collapses, and the left wing hits the ground in a shower of sparks. The right-hand gear also gives way, pitching the aircraft forward as Amelia desperately kills the throttles. The plane gradually spins to a halt.
You all right?
Good reaction. Cut the switch. You saved our ass.
Come on, Fred!
The pair desperately scramble from the aircraft and run for their lives, fearing an explosion as the fire truck arrives. More help arrives, and the journalists, now eager for more pictures. Amelia and Fred turn away from the prying lenses in shock and disbelief. The two aviators stare at their stricken aircraft. Amelia clutches a hand to her head. Waves break on a shore, and a headline reads, "Around the world attempt comes to sudden end. Disaster dashes aviatrix's hopes." Collapsed landing gear is culprit. Earhart's cool nerves save lives on board. A shattered Amelia sits at home.
I'll make it good, GP. I swear to you I will. We'll make it back and more, I promise. The book sales, the lectures, this flight will keep us going another 3 years.
Maybe.
No, it will, I promise. Our sales, our prices are going to double. This just showed them how dangerous it all is. They were taking it for granted. They thought I was competent.
I meant... Maybe we can just stop.
You mean after?
Go on, even now?
So my exit would be a stupid crash and withdrawing from a world-publicized attempt to finally do something no man had done before. It would ruin us in the bargain.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's nothing.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I'd be fine with that.
That's because you're an idiot.
Lucky for you.
And what if it's not something I need to show the world? What if it's something I need to show me?
She looks at George with fear in her eyes, then snuggles up to him. The Electra is being worked on.
I don't really have a choice. I have to reverse the route. You're facing hurricanes in the Caribbean, monsoons in Africa.
Yeah, you'll be flying howling last.
When I'm most tired.
Yeah.
So I just won't get tired. What's the timetable on the plane?
3 weeks. Should be good as new. We have a remarkable crew here. Best that money
can buy.
Buy.
All the money wasted is never coming back.
You cut the engine. It would have cost a bundle more to replace a burnt-out plane. Not to mention a burnt-out pilot.
I overreacted. The plane was too heavy. I should have used more rudder instead of the throttle.
It's only money. We'll figure this out. We always do.
George embraces his wife and smiles at her reassuringly. She smiles back, then moves away thoughtfully.
Have you considered, Miss Earhart, that your enthusiasm as a pilot outweighs your ability, as demonstrated by the disaster in Honolulu? People are saying that you're reckless, a better celebrity than a pilot.
Enthusiastic? Yes. Reckless? Not on your life. I'm a flyer, pursuing my passion for the fun of it. That's all. Thank you. A future flyer.
A girl presents a bouquet. Miami, Florida, June the 1st, 1937, and the plane is ready. The large crowds and the journalists have gathered. George, Amelia, and Fred are wreathed in smiles.
He will fly the world's full circumference, 24,902 miles to travel across the South Atlantic.
After this round-the-world flight, Miss Earhart, are you going to give up long-distance flying?
Not while there's still life left in me. Always ready for a new adventure.
Okay.
Fred, you're on.
Hey, Fred, give us a big smile for the camera.
Fred flinches as a flashbulb pops. Amelia and George walk into a quiet hangar arm in arm. They look deep into each other's eyes and she strokes his cheek. Reluctantly, they break apart. George's face, a mask of sorrow as Amelia walks away. He turns to watch her go and she flashes a broad grin back at him over her shoulder. Amelia climbs the wing to the cockpit and waves a goodbye for the eager cameras. The final wave is just for George. The plane gathers speed and lifts off into the twilight sky. They're flying over a canyon, then over flooded plains.
A fairyland of beauty lay below and about me, so lovely as to distract a pilot's attention from the task at hand. That of herding a heavy plane out of that great upland saucer and over the mountains that make its rim.
The Electra soars over white-capped seas, rivers, and plains. The silver plane crosses a desert, its black shadow scudding along the featureless ground. Amelia banks, and they cross a dusty, moonscape mountain range. Amelia films a crude, baked mud building, like a church with a tower, braced with wooden beams sticking out through the walls. Fred's climbing the tower.
What is this thing, huh?
Whole thing's made of mud.
It's beautiful.
It's like working with you. Come on, Amelia.
Fred pulls at a goat with a rope round its neck. They fly over more soaring, barren mountains. Young Gore Vidal is at home listening to a radio.
Amelia Earhart has reached Calcutta.
Dad,
the heavy rains have temporarily grounded her. She will push on to Bangkok, then Papua New Guinea, before heading east toward her final destination, California.
It's raining in Calcutta, India. 12,498 miles to go.
We should go, Fred.
Oh, come on. You're not really taking off.
It's only going to get heavier. We could be stuck here for days, even weeks. It's only 700 miles to Bangkok. It's lighter there.
To get that far in a monsoon, you need divine help.
Okay.
Thank you. Come on, Fred.
She takes a sip of tea, sets her jaw, and heads for the plane. Fred jogs after her. The edge of the runway is marked with fires as they take off into the dark and the lashing rain. Amelia frowns at the controls, her face a mask of concentration. Fred joins her in the cockpit.
You think we should turn back, huh?
Nope, I think we shouldn't have come.
Amelia grins, completely in her element as the plane is buffeted by turbulence. It's still pouring with rain in the daytime at Lae, Papua New Guinea, 6,866 miles to go. Fred's at a palm-roofed bar, sipping a drink. He walks across the open-sided bar and slumps into a chair. There are two empty glasses on the table. Amelia joins him, hanging her sopping wet coat over the back of a chair.
You look beat, lady.
That's funny, you look tip-top.
Why don't you grab a few hours of sleep?
Might as well keep you company. I've got some good flying stores. Thank you.
Yeah. You and your old George, that's a touching love story.
An honest one, if I say so myself.
I wonder if it's honest enough for George.
If you mean Jean, we're not together anymore. In that way, not for a long time. You don't think I love my husband?
Actually, I do. In a certain way.
But you disapprove of how I live?
Hell no. It's just like me. In fact, it's like most guys I know.
Meaning?
Guys love their wives, their girlfriends. Doesn't mean they don't take advantage of an opportunity.
Fred challenges Amelia with a look. She smiles back coldly.
If you have a point, make it.
I believe I have.
She reaches for her coat and stands up.
All you need to do is just show up tomorrow morning. Show up sober. And get me to Howland Island.
Glass in hand, Fred watches her leave.
Amelia strides away, lifting her face to the wind and the rain. Amelia goes to a radio shack.
Ready, Mum.
Thank you.
The radio operator allows Amelia to settle at the console and positions himself by the door.
Feel like stepping out for a smoke?
Oh, I don't smoke.
Or something?
He gets the hint and leaves. Amelia puts on the headset and smiles as she moves closer to the microphone.
Earhart here.
Putnam here.
You should be sleeping.
You should be working.
I'm running a big adventure here.
I'm a very important fellow.
You told me I was the star, and you'd be nearby, a small particle of dust in my constellation.
I thought I was joking. Guess the joke's on me.
I'll be in Honolulu on the 3rd, and with you in Oakland on the 4th of July, okay?
Don't keep me waiting.
I won't dare.
How's Fred? On the wagon?
I sent you my movies to lighten the plane.
You wouldn't sell a salesman, would you?
Fred is fine. He's calculating head wind speed versus fuel as we speak.
So what's that I hear in your voice?
Amelia's smile freezes.
Is he drinking?
I can handle it.
All right, call it off. Call it off now.
Right now, Amelia. I mean it. Right now.
I can handle it.
After the 4th, we're going home.
Where's that?
For me. Anywhere you are.
Amelia puts a hand over her mouth as her eyes brim with tears.
I'm going to like it there. Better, since this is going to be my last flight.
If you insist.
George keeps his emotions on a tight rein as Amelia wrestles with hers.
I love you.
George can't let the emotion through. Amelia caresses the microphone and smiles.
Should I let you go now?
Never. I'll go tell the world you're on your way.
See ya. My darling.
She wipes the tears from her face. George closes his eyes.
See you, my love.
Amelia switches off the microphone, takes off the headset, gathers herself, and leaves the radio hut. She sits watching the ocean waves in the dark and looking up at the clouds. Dawn breaks, a blaze of gold in a clear sky. A truck heads for the landing strip and Fred strides towards the plane. A team clambers over the Electra, helping to prepare for the flight. Amelia's throwing items out of the cabin, including a life raft and some zebra pelts in order to save weight.
Might be easier to just shoot me.
Traveling light is all.
You got room for 180 pounds of asshole? Ma'am, I'm so sorry.
It's fine. Everything is.
Fred nods in humbled gratitude, and Amelia smiles reassuringly. The plane's fueled and takes to the air, watched from the wooden control tower and waved off by the ground crew standing on their truck. The people at the bar also wave as Amelia and Fred head out towards the calm blue ocean.
Not more than a month ago, I was on the other shore of the Pacific, looking westward. This morning, I look eastward over the Pacific. In these fast-moving days that have intervened, the whole width of the world has passed behind us, except this broad ocean. I shall be glad when we have the hazards of its navigation behind us.
Mr. Balfour, come in. Over.
Mr. Putnam.
The headwinds were stronger than they knew when they took off.
I recalculated the fuel. It will cost them 9%.
9%?
Amelia frowns as she looks out of the cockpit. Fred's in the back with his instruments.
King How Able, Queen Queen, can you read me? King How Able, Queen Queen, can you read me?
The plane skims between the quiet ocean below and gathering clouds above.
Mr. Butler, I can't read them, sir.
I tried voice and Morse code.
Now forget Morse code, they didn't take the receiver. Just stay with voice. You'll get them.
In the dark at Howard Island is U.S. Coast Guard cutter Itasca. Aboard in the radio room, an officer lights a pipe. The Electra forges on through the blackness. A man shines a torch around and a sailor dozes in the radio room. He jumps to attention as an officer enters.
At ease, sailor. Direction finder. How long has this been left on?
The sailor swallows nervously.
The battery's dead.
In her dimly lit cockpit, Amelia checks her watch. It shows 3:15. In the back, Fred makes calculations on his maps and with his instruments.
Itasca, this is Earhart.
We're about 200 miles out.
Sky overcast. Over.
That's her, on 3105. She said cloudy and overcast.
A sailor adds to a report on a typewriter, and a lighthouse shines out in the dark. George sits, brow furrowed with worry, at his radio.
Itasca, this is Earhart.
Sky overcast. Over.
We are receiving your signal. Please acknowledge ours. What is your position in ETA, Howland? Over.
Hearing nothing but static, Amelia glances over her shoulder at Fred.
Itasca, this is Earhart. Unable to hear you. Over.
Earhart, this is Itasca. Did you receive transmission?
Amelia makes an adjustment to her radio.
King How Able Queen Queen, please acknowledge our signal's on key. Please acknowledge. Over.
She's having trouble with voice transmission. Stay with Morse.
Dawn breaks, casting a glow across the gently rippling ocean.
Itasca, this is King How Able Queen Queen, but unable to receive you by radio.
Cannot take bearing on you. If you can hear this, please take
Earhart's signal strength 4.
Bearing on us in half an hour.
We'll make noise in microphone. We are about 100 miles out. Over.
She's got to stay on longer.
On air too briefly. Bearing's impossible.
The sailor types, impossible, 6:45 a.m. Amelia checks the time on her watch, and Fred takes a position reading from out of the window with a navigational instrument. Fred frantically scribbles a note on a pad, rips off the page and passes it to Amelia on the wire rigged between the cabin and the cockpit. Amelia reads it and frowns. On the Itasca, a clock shows 7:15.
Maybe her Morse receiver's out. King How Able Queen Queen, this is Itasca. Can't take bearing on 3105, please send on 500. Or do you want to take bearing on us? Over.
As the radio men try to re-establish contact, Amelia looks out at a cloudy sky and white-capped waves below. Fred can't see through the clouds. He clasps his hands together and lowers his head as if in prayer. The clock on Itasca shows 7:30.
Intercom top deck. Double check the smokestack.
O'Hare to top deck. Top deck, come in.
Black smoke billows from the Itasca's funnel.
You should be able to see that for 20 miles at least.
Amelia can see nothing ahead but sea and hazy sky. The radio operator keeps trying.
Itasca, this is King Hao, Able Queen Queen. We must be on you, but cannot see you.
Fuel is running low, but unable to receive you by radio.
We are flying at altitude 1,000 feet. Over.
We are receiving you and transmitting on 3105 and 500 consistently. Over.
Frustration, Amelia hits the radio with the microphone. Fred sits back in his seat.
I can't go, we are
circling but cannot hear you.
Over.
King Hao, Able Queen Queen, this is Itasca. Your signal is strong.
Itasca, this is King Hao, Able Queen Queen. We received your signal but unable to take bearing.
Your signal received okay. It is impossible to take a bearing on 3105 on your voice. Send us a longer transmission, please. Over.
George is standing at a window looking out at the sea. He dives for the phone.
Miss Earhart has finally received transmission from my task.
Keep us at 7500. That's your only acknowledgement.
You've got her signal, dammit. What about the direction finder?
Cipriani reports the battery is dead, sir. It was left on all night, so we can't track her.
King Hao, Able Queen Queen to Itasca.
Earhart, will you please come in and reply on 500? We are transmitting constantly on 7500, and we cannot hear you on 500.
Amelia's eyes brim with tears as she tries vainly to get any sound from the radio. She clasps a hand to her mouth. The sea ahead is calm and empty.
In attempts, the USS Itasca has lost contact with Amelia Earhart.
Come on.
Jean listens grimly to the radio. The sailors wait with increasing concern, and Fred shudders as he takes a deep breath.
King Hao, Able Queen Queen to Itasca. We are on the position line 157-337.
We are running north and south.
We hear you. We hear you. Are you receiving us?
Amelia stares expressionlessly out of the windscreen. Behind her, hands clasped together, Fred tries to control his fear.
Earhart, this is Itasca. Did you receive transmission?
The Electra flies on over empty ocean. The dark waters get closer and closer. George and his team wait anxiously in the office for news. The Itasca radio operator sits in fearful silence.
Itasca to Earhart, come in, please.
The second operator buries his face in his hands. Birds fly over rolling surf as George walks unsteadily along the rocky shore near the lighthouse. Unshaven, George looks out over the breaking waves to the ocean beyond. and sits down on the rocks.
All the things I never said for so very long. Look up. They're in my eyes.
George looks up at the lightly overcast sky. The Electra flies on above the clouds.
Everyone has oceans to fly, as long as you have the heart to do it. Is it reckless? Maybe. But what do dreams know of boundaries?
The plane dissolves into the white clouds. Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan vanished somewhere over the Pacific Ocean on July the 2nd, 1937. The U.S. government mounted the largest rescue mission in history, but no evidence of the Electra was found. The fate of Amelia Earhart has intrigued the world for generations. Photographs of the time show the real Amelia.
I think about the hands I've held. The places I've seen. The vast lands whose dirt is caked on the bottom of my shoes.
She smiles with Tom Noonan, waves a flag with a crowd of women flyers, and poses by a plane holding hands with George. Amelia leaps out of a cockpit and runs down the wing to George. She grins her toothy smile.
The world has changed me.
Amelia Earhart, 1897 to 1937.